let's get back to Consult Us on Business on TalkZone.com. Here's your host, Frank Bisconti.
Welcome back to the show. As promised right before the break, joining us today is nationally renowned author, speaker, educator, and serial entrepreneur who has just written a new book, School for Startups, which is available to everyone on Amazon.com. Right now, I'd like to welcome to the show Jim Beach. Jim, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Jim, you hold a very special distinction among all my guests that have been on the show since we started about 12 weeks ago. You know what that is?
Strangest last name.
No, sir. You are the only guest that I have had so far that I have not had the pleasure of meeting in person or knowing personally.
Oh, okay. Well, that is quite an honor. I appreciate the risk that you are taking. I hope I do not offend or disappoint you somehow.
Your reputation precedes you.
Okay.
Jim, you have written a new book. I would like to hold off just a few minutes about talking about that and just kind of let our listeners know a little bit about who you are and what you are. So can you just give us a little bit of your background, maybe starting from your college days, because you had a very interesting college degree that I read that you started about, and then we'll work our way up to the book.
Okay. I was an international politics and economics major, and spent a lot of time in Japan and worked for Coca-Cola in Japan. Got my master's in Japanese business and Japanese linguistic theory, which is very useful for your average entrepreneur. And I thought I was going to be the CEO of Coca-Cola, Frank. I was a corporate guy doing a great job at Coca-Cola Japan for them, and thought I was an up-and-coming employee. And I was 25, something like that, and decided I needed to come home back from Japan and wanted to get married, you know, and all those sort of things, and came back to Atlanta, and no one at Coca-Cola, you know, Atlanta is Coca-Cola headquarters, no one would hire me. And they said, you have a bad reputation, Jim. I was like, what have I done? I saved the company a bunch of, you know, listed all of my things. They were, no. You don't play well with others. You should just go out and start your own business. And I had never thought of that. And it took me a couple years to really come to terms with it, but I ended up starting a business in 94. With less than $2,000, not an original idea. It was a copy of someone else's idea. And so it really gets to the philosophy that is at my core. Creativity is not important. I'm willing to take someone else's idea and make it better. And I'm not going to take much risk. You know, $2,000, $3,000, $4,000, $5,000 is about my maximum, investment that I'm comfortable with. And that comes from back in 94 when I had no money to invest anyway. The reason I didn't invest any money, didn't have any. Reason I took the idea from someone else, totally legally, you know, was because I didn't have an idea of my own, but yet I knew I had to do something. And so I think those are important points. You know, let's not wait on a creativity lightning bolt. Let's not risk the house and the health care. Let's start small businesses. And so anyway, did that business and did $56,000 in revenue in its first year, Frank. But in 2001, it was doing $12 million a year in revenue with 700 employees. And I think that's pretty sexy. You know, we started small with no money, but it shows you can grow a business big, you know, off no investment. Just because you start with little doesn't mean it won't get to be a really big business. And in 2001, started teaching some college classes. Sold that business and started teaching college. And one of the things we did in the class was we tried to be as non-academic as possible and as practical as possible. So we started classes, started businesses in class. And the first semester, I kind of got stupid and backed myself into betting the class that I could start a business that semester. And they got to choose the country and the industry that I would start the business in. And they thought they were real funny, and so they chose Pakistan and furniture. And so I had 3.5 months to get a Pakistani furniture company up and running, profitable, cash flow profitable, and repaid all initial investment. And we did, and it became a great learning model. Again, we spent less than $5,000 on that business. The business ended up being something that I had seen sort of like in Santa Barbara. One time I saw an ottoman that had like a carpet on it. It wasn't like, you know, a leather ottoman. It looked like someone had taken a carpet and cut it up and made that into an ottoman. And when my class had Pakistani furniture, I was like, okay, we'll take Pakistani rugs, which are also called Oriental rugs, and cut them up and buy them real cheap in flea markets in Karachi, Pakistan, cut them up and put them on furniture, and that'll be a special product. That'll be unique. No one else has got that. So it was a great success. Your viewers can go to timelessshare.com right now if they want to look at it. The business is no longer operational. But it was a great little business, and it proves the point. Again, creativity is not important. Risk is not important. And taught for up until about a year or so ago, and now working on the book full-time and doing some, a lot of public speaking and just getting out there promoting our message. Low-risk entrepreneurship is what will help reduce those horrible statistics that you ended the last segment with, Frank. The 6.9% 5 years from now is as good as we can hope to get. You know what that means to me is I have to take my own destiny into my own hands and start a business now, small, build on internal cash flow, because I cannot put myself at any more risk than, already in this volatile world. Got to go out there and start a small business now that it doesn't, don't wait for creativity. Go find an idea. Go to Google, type in free business ideas, and select something that comes up. Hundreds of websites will come up with lists after lists of ideas. Find an idea that you can execute. So, Frank, I don't think entrepreneurship is about creativity or risk. I think it's about finding a problem. Go find a problem and solve it. That's all you have to do. And don't wait for creativity because, you know what? Someone else created the problem for you. The problem's already been created. All you have to do is solve it now. Find the problem. And I don't know. That's where that gets me caught up. Oh. How's that?
Yeah. No, that's... that's great. Some of the things that you have said over the last 2 to 3 minutes, I would say I'm sitting here smiling, and I guess some people can see me if they're watching through the internet feed, but the reason that I'm smiling is over the last 4 months, you have pretty much touched on many of the points that I discuss with the listeners and how important it is for them to consider starting their own businesses and how to go about it, not spending a lot of money by trying to find a need in the marketplace, and they don't have to reinvent the wheel. When you first started, I want to just jump back real quick because you almost sounded apologetic when you started your very first company. Because you said you took something that already existed and you just tried to put a new spin on it and you brought it to market, and we didn't get into the particulars, but that's actually a very Japanese type of philosophy. Don't necessarily create something new, take something that exists and make it better.
Well, it's amazing. I agree with everything you said. As a child, went to a summer camp as a kid. And it was, it was a computer summer camp, and I loved it. It was at Clark Crest Resort in New Jersey. And when I had to start my business, I was also going back to school. I went back to school after all that other Japanese education. I went back to school, and so I needed a business that I could run during the summertime that would support me 12 months a year. And I didn't have an idea of my own, so I was like, you know what? This internet thing is just beginning, and people are starting to get emails, accounts and stuff, and this computer thing, and a computer camp for kids just like I did as a kid would be really cool, but I'm not going to do mine at Clark Crest Resort. Our first location was at Stanford University. Our second location was at MIT in Boston. We then went to UCLA, SMU in Houston, Emory in Atlanta, University of Michigan, UPenn, 89 other brand name schools. Whatever was the best school in the market, that's where we were. We were also sponsored by people like Intel, Microsoft, NASA, Lego, Lucas, Spielberg, Hewlett-Packard. And so exactly what you said. We took an idea that already existed, but now mom has the opportunity to say, you know what? My kid's studying computers at Stanford this summer. What's your kid doing? And you know how much I can charge for that? I can tell you exactly how much I could charge for that in 1999. I'll show you our price schedule. It was astronomical. But you know what? People loved it because we were providing a real need. And that business did do something very good. In addition to being very expensive and making a lot of money, the business took kids that were unhappy, kids that were computer kids, that maybe weren't certainly weren't football players and cheerleaders and maybe were not socially adept and didn't know their niche yet. And what they hadn't learned that they were going to be the smart ones, the ones that were called bosses down the road, the people that were called successful down the road. They didn't know that yet. And we took these kids that were unhappy and we fixed them. And so when a parent would call, they would say, yeah, we're calling about this program. And 5 minutes later, I'd have the mom crying because she realized that for the first time in her life, she found a place where her child was going to fit in and be rewarded for being the way he was. And think of what a mother is willing to pay for that. Ma'am, I need your credit card right now. Spaces are filling up fast. How many weeks can I have? You know, because we were offering such a good product.
So whatever happened to that business?
The typical dot-com story started in 94 as a pure brick and mortar at Stanford, MIT, again, using other people's facilities. So our brick and mortar was essentially free. We didn't have to maintain it or anything. And then it came with a huge brand name associated with it. It was a perfect business model. As everyone else started going dot-com and everything, we were doing that early. We were teaching online distance classes in 95, 96. And, the business grew and started doing all sorts of other things. It ran boys and girls clubs programs and after school things and developed curriculum for K through 12 and went international and became quite larger than just a summer camp company. It truly became a children's education company. We had movie making classes and weight reduction things and get kids off Ritalin programs. Any way we could separate mom from their money, we would do it. As long as we were still fulfilling our mission of fixing kids. But anyway, eventually the business decided that it wanted to become a $1 billion business and be like the eBay of kids. You know, there wasn't a kid winner. And we went after venture capital and got all wrapped up in the venture capital of 99 and 2000. And as soon as the venture capitalists got in there and saw what the assets really were, they liquidated immediately. They said it's worth more in its pieces. Some of the technology that we had developed was, you know, for the distance education is still being used by companies out there today. They decided that maybe they knew this in the beginning. We were sexier broken up than we were as a true entity. And, you know, that's again one of the reasons I'm preaching this low risk start internally, grow on your own cash flow, because venture capitalists are by definition bad people. You know, it's worse than the lawyer, you know, all of those things, I do believe. And so I want you to own your business. I don't want you to make the mistake I did where you sell one of your children to a pawnbroker or a venture capitalist or something like that.
I actually talked about that last week. I talked about exit strategies, and in prior weeks I also talked about wanting to get in bed with venture capitalists and kind of steer people away from that unless it's absolutely necessary. It's how important it is to maintain control of your own destiny unless you absolutely have to. Jim, we're coming up on a very short break right now. Can you stick with us for just a minute
absolutely.
Or two? I'd like to continue and talk to you about your new book that's out there and what that's all about. So when we come back, we're going to continue talking with Jim, and we're going to introduce his new book on our show, School for Startups. We'll be right back. This is TalkZone.com.